wanted to, again, we'll do this after each break, but we just wanted to check in with you. Anything that you wanted to share, or any questions that came up? Can we get a microphone to Jackie? Thank you, Gina.
Yeah, I don't, and I was kind of aware of this before today, and I do understand that it's thinking, trying to figure this stuff out is a slippery slope, but I kind of don't get consciousness. I've sort of never gotten the way we talk about it as a distinction, and I have never, I understand the whole movie projector thing. Of course I understand it, it's clearly expressed, but in your book and talking about it, but I don't get it. I don't get the its distinction from mind. You know, I've been so steeped in the conversation about mind now for a few months. That just seems like everything to me. That everything that's authentic.
I remember hearing a Sid Banks lecture where somebody said to him, why do you talk about three principles? I mean, it's all mind. Why talk about three principles? And he said, well, it is all mind. It's all that spiritual energy. It's the formless in form, the energy and intelligence behind life, whether in form or formless. He said, but if you're going to ask me to sit in front of a group and talk, I need to have a couple of aspects of it so that I can talk about it.
Okay.
So that's, to me, sometimes what it seems. It's just different aspects of mind. It's all of this same energy. But that's...
Yeah, so my thoughts on what you're saying is, welcome to the club.
Yeah.
If anybody can say they get consciousness or thought, that's the piece here. It's like you don't want to look at it in terms of getting. As we talk about, creativity and coming from the unknown to the known, you'll just see something. It'll just occur to you. We're doing our best to kind of point to something that is spiritual. I remember a tape, again, of Sidney Banks, and he's talking about thought. He goes, thought's spiritual. What can you say about thought spiritual? What are you going to say about it? So we do our best to try to talk about the fact that you can have an awareness of what you've created. But that's just at the level of what we know now, But you don't want to look at getting the principles because you already know them. That's the piece that's kind of, to me, amazing, is that we already know them. We just forgot that we know them. And we get touched. We get touched when we hear the principles, at least me. Then I want them. I want to know them, see? But that's only because you got touched by them. So the first thing is give up on getting them. What I see of what Sidney Banks has said is mind is, it's all one principle, he says. Yet, how I look at it is the spiritual nature has to manifest in a form, because we're here. It manifests in an experience, and that's what I hear him talk about thought being. It allows a formless energy to manifest. See, so we hardly have tapped, as you said earlier, what thought is. But you get a resonant, you get a feeling for it, and you just let it percolate. And so consciousness and thought bring your creation to life. So you have a complete experience moment to moment of the spiritual energy. My cats at home, when we had cats, They do the same thing. When I come downstairs in the morning, they're thinking food. And they want it. Everything about them is wanting food. You could just see it. They're following me. I'm tripping over them. They're meowing. It is so powerful that we now house sit our friend's cat. And my wife bought cat treats. She keeps them in a cupboard in the kitchen. In the morning when she appears, now I'm there, and you know he's roaming around. When she comes, he has thought. He has thought, snacks. And he'll go jump on the, he won't leave her alone, jump up on the, so there's thought and consciousness. See? Now, as far as I know, the one gift we have as human is we can know what's going on. We could see behind the curtain. For us, we could recognize we're creating an experience through these principles. I don't see my cats having that gift. I sat them down.
When you started talking about the cat, I was thinking, well, okay, you talked about the Sid Banks lecture. You're going to talk about what the cat lecture was?
No. Oh, man, we do. We have our own reality. So that's what I would share with you about that.
You know, the thing that that came to mind is, as Mark was saying that, and I've always thought I must be hell for a designer to work with, because I literally cannot tell them what I'm looking for. But I always know it when I see it, and I know when something's on track or off track. And the designers who work well with me are the ones who realize that it's okay. They can kind of work with that feedback, warmer, colder, and create. Now, it seems to me, when Mark was talking about we already know this, we don't know what to look for, but we know it when we see it. There's something in us that recognizes truth. And it's just a feeling, and you can use that feeling as a warmer, colder. Even though you don't know what you're looking for, and you don't know what it looks like, you know it when you see it. You know it when you, there's just a moment where you go, oh yeah, yeah, it's that. And then that, and that's why, for me, when Mark said last night a lot about just, you know, do you have a nice feeling? Then you're getting it. It's that feeling, it's that quieter, more spacious feeling that just lets you know, okay, yeah, yeah. Yeah, we're on the right track here.
Right. I think with creative stuff, I know it is for me, that I don't know how something's going to be when it's finished.
Yeah.
But then I know when it's finished.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that. Yeah.
Who else would like to share?
Yeah. You of all people should know to wait for the microphone. Good Lord.
Oh, that's a big eye there, Dave.
Do a selfie now, Dave.
Just what you were saying, my four-year-old this week said to my wife, he said, Mommy, I always love you, but sometimes I forget. And I just thought that spoke to the idea that we know all this, it's always there, but we forget about it.
Yeah. That's cute. Anyone else want to share any questions you've had from the morning?
I get the thing about thought, sort of, although I'm not getting it. So I understand that when I have a thought, I don't have to pay attention to it. It doesn't have to be, you know, the reality. But what about the good thoughts? I guess that's the thing. When you say, like, you'll know it when you see it, isn't that a thought, too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's all
but it's
thought.
A good thought?
Well, it's all thought.
Right.
It's all thought. Good.
So is there no good and bad?
Well,
There okay. are in thought.
Yeah. See, at the spiritual level, see, which is really just creation, it doesn't care. I mean, a spiritual energy has no thinking about what you're going to create. They don't care less what you create. It's you just have an energy to create. It's just given to you to create an experience of your life. We're the ones that put some evaluation on our creation. See, we're the ones that say, well, it's okay to have good thoughts, but not we should do something about our thinking. That's just an idea we have about the fact that we think, is that we should do something about it. Like if we're having negative thoughts, let them go and look for good thoughts. Now Sidney Banks says to do that. He says to do that. But what you want to see is that the actual energy, the actual spiritual energy has nothing in there about a quality of your thinking. It's just giving you a power to create this, whether it's negative or positive. So that's the first thing you want to see. What you call good and bad thoughts all come from the same source. They're all from the same source. You see?
Yes.
And it is much nicer to think good thoughts.
Yes.
I like doing that. I like thinking good thoughts. I love thinking good thoughts, you know. But you don't want to get into having to do that. We're not worried about what you think. Other approaches and understandings focus on what you think and then tell you what to do with that. Last night we talked about how to improve that. All we want you to feel, get a sense of, is what brings that about? See, what are you that brings that about? Now, what'll happen is you'll see, it'll just occur to you. This is the creative aspect of having a feel for these principles. It'll occur to you, oh man, my thinking's going south. Then it'll occur to you, settle down. Then it'll occur to you, maybe I ought to look in another direction. You see? It will just occur. It isn't something that you have to use as a focal point of your life or focus your life or your life experience toward it. When you set out, me too, you know, like I did this. So I'm talking from my own experience as well as seeing hundreds and hundreds of people. When you set out to try to think a certain way or only honor a certain way of thinking or look in a certain way of thinking, you're kind of vulnerable to getting kind of judgmental. And so all we want to do is all you want to do is come back to, oh man, look what I'm creating. And as you realize what you're creating, you'll get another thought. But here's what Sidney Banks says. Now, Sidney Banks is talking from this understanding, I think. He says, if you have a negative thought, let it go, think positive. He says, welcome positive thoughts, let go of your negative thoughts. When you have negative memories, bad memories, let them go. If you have good memories, enjoy them. So he says these things. But he's saying them from an understanding that you don't want to use that as life strategies. You just want to see that you want to see for yourself how qualities of thought get created from this spiritual nature you are. That's what you want to see. Does that help?
It does help. It does. I guess the thing I wish I could articulate it better. I don't really mean like, oh, I have to stop thinking that, oh,
okay,
that thought snap thing. I think I mean, I don't know what I mean.
Can I have a go? Because I don't know what you mean either, but I think something that might be related to it. And I'm doing this with two caveats. Caveat one, I've not done this one before, so it might not work out. And caveat two, if this is different to what you're saying, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
All right? So, okay. Over here in the invisible is this infinite creative potential. Okay? So mind, for the purposes of this illustration, it's not on this flip chart. Not on any flip chart. It's this invisible creative potential. Right? Now, Sid talked about thought as the missing link between the formless and the form, as this energy that brings the formless, invisible energy into form, into something that is tangible, that with consciousness we can see and taste and touch and smell. So out of the blue, out of the nothingness, out of this space, these forms, these thought forms come. Now, here's... Right. Now, we also have our little brains.
Sometimes I just wish I didn't have
them. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're not all they're cracked up to be. And these have lots of knowledge and memories, and you know, they've got sort of thoughts we've had before that are just still in the system, right? Now, and then something gets expressed into the world. That's the breath of life right there. That's what that is symbolic of. Just go with me. And that's our expression. Now, there is a fundamental difference in the feeling of these thoughts to the feeling of these thoughts, regardless of whether they're, we might judge them as positive thoughts or negative thoughts. This might be a thought about the plight of humanity. It will still have a different feeling than a thought about how well Bobby did at soccer practice that's really positive. It's coming from a deeper place. It's fresh. It's new. It hasn't been thought before. It's the same energy, but it has a feeling of freshness to it, of life. It has that flavor of mind to it. The more this is what's getting expressed through us, I'm going to really stress this, the more that's what's getting expressed, the more what we're doing has that flavor. Now, that doesn't mean there's no room for artistry or skill or anything like that. That's part of the form. But the flavor of it is the source. This stuff, when this gets expressed, it has just a different flavor to it. It feels, it might be cool, but it doesn't feel the same, right? It's egoic. It's about us. Now, here's the other problem with this, is this stuff is almost always about itself, right? So this thing can get so lost in this bubble, this separate reality, that it feels like this doesn't exist. I don't get insights. I'm not creative, right? I don't get what you're talking about. My life's really hard. And that's a representation of what we're talking about, how it goes from formless to form, and why sometimes it doesn't feel like it does. Why sometimes it feels like I've got to find it in here. I got to find it in my little brain. And it's, even if you do find something, which sometimes you will, it ain't going to be a speck of dust on the ass of this. It's a weird metaphor I just used.
No. It was.
My experience is like it passes through me, you know, without my going up to all those things within my own. It's wonderful. It's like when I'm feeling really good about like a creative idea or something that comes to me, it just kind of passes on through, and it's not getting caught up there.
Yeah, it's okay. I think it has to come through there because you can measure it on an fMRI.
Right.
And
it's
you
not
can,
getting
you know,
hung
but
up
it's,
there.
But yeah,
it's
just coming through.
Going straight, yeah, okay.
You know, which
mm-hmm.
is the cool. every expression of flow, right?
Yeah. Thank you.
Every creative expression of flow, it flows through.
How to recognize this? I mean, what's that feel like?
I'm suspicious of you.
Okay.
I don't believe you don't know the answer to that question. Now, stay with me.
Okay.
But from the 2 minutes I've heard of from you today, I get that you have made at least part of your life about letting something come through.
Yes.
So you tell me, for you, how do you know when it's shit? Not in a oddly, not in a judgmental way, you know, not like I'm shit.
Right.
And how do you know when it's coming from a deeper place? It's coming.
How do I know? I know.
Right.
Right.
Okay. That's what I meant. We all know.
Right.
We all have a feel for it. Now, can you cultivate that feel? Yes.
That's my question.
Yes. But you cultivate that feel by paying attention to it.
Yeah.
That's all. By noticing it. It's nothing to do. It's a...
Right. Michael, last night I was talking about encoding.
Yeah.
You said you didn't get it. You actually drew it out on the board there in our little brain. We really do have our DNA memory, and we encode things, which modulates what flows through us.
Yeah.
And it keeps us in that internal sphere. And so it's a question, I think, of recognizing that and allow the flow to happen.
Yeah.
That's my point. My question to you is, there are those, perhaps in this room and others, who would describe that formless energy of the universe as God. And mm-hmm. we haven't talked about religion at all here. You've literally had people like Jesus who said, I am the Son of God. In other words, I've tied into that universal energy. How do we separate religion and spirituality?
The first thing is I'm going to change the question a little.
Okay.
I'm going to answer, how do I?
Okay.
Because I don't know how you do it.
Sure.
For me, what we're talking about as spiritual energy is before religion. Religions are some of the forms and some of the most common forms in human history that a recognition of this spiritual energy has taken. So... do I say pretty much or do I say every? I'm going to say every religion I have come across, and I've put some study into many, speaks to that.
Right.
Now, for me, the differences in the religious expression, not in the religions, but in the religious expression at an individual level are... to what extent has the form that it's taken become more important than what formed it? So I spent some time working in the Muslim community at various levels, from people who were, you know, heads of church, temple. Mosque. I obviously was paying attention.
It's mosque.
But to a cab driver who's taken me in London from the place I went to, a place about an hour and a half away. And so it was interesting because I'd read the Quran that during that period because I wanted to get a sense of it. And I was in this conversation, and the cab driver asked me, you know, he found out what I did. He said, well, so should I be Muslim? No, I mean, look, probably the better answer would have been, why the fuck are you asking me? Can you put the radio on? But for whatever reason, it occurred to me to try to answer. And what I said to him, and this is just what occurred to me in the cab, is if through your religion you find yourself feeling closer to this invisible energy, to this spirit, to love, to a oneness, then from my point of view, you should go as deep into your religion as you're moved to. If your religion cuts you off from that, if you find that the more you practice, the less connected you feel, then from my point of view, you might want to give it a miss. And that's how I... It's formless and form again.
Yeah, no, that's mm-hmm. great. That's yeah. a great explanation.
Okay. I always get... it's funny. Everywhere I go, I get that kind of question a lot. And the two places where I remember being most... treading most carefully was in prison when I was speaking with the, you know, Kathy's...
inmates?
The murderers. Who, like, you know, when the guy with the Jesus tattoo goes, it sounds to me like you're dissing Jesus. That was one where I had some thinking about it. But we finished as friends. It was nice, actually. We really connected. Because at the formless, there's only one conversation. And the other time that I remember really, really finding it awkward is I was speaking at a big church in London. I speak there once a year. And somebody started talking about, what you're saying sounds a lot like what Jesus said, and it sounds a lot like what Gandhi said, and it sounds a lot like... And he listed about three other guys who'd been killed. And I just was like, does this end badly for me? But you know, to take it into something I thought earlier when you were speaking about what we do as practitioners in this work, that we, once we see, oh, this is you. You are this spiritual intelligence. And you are this spiritual intelligence. And you are this spiritual intelligence. We're a lot more John the Baptist than Jesus. Right? Like, we're recognizing something that is in people. And facilitating it coming out. We're not giving them anything that isn't already there. I wanted to say that earlier, but I didn't want to bring up religion. But now that it's up, I figured with that.
I just think for me, I think it's the formless coming into a form, and the form is the religion, whatever the religion is. But for me, it looks to me that they speak to this. They speak to the feeling, they speak to the spiritual. And a lot of the religions, it's outside of you. You know, it's like something you have to go, you will find. But it's outside of you. It's not that you are God, if we're going to, you know, or God. You're not the spiritual energy. You have to look for it, or you're going to go at some point and connect with it. But there's always the sense that it's outside of you. I'm not speaking all religions, but I'm just kind of speaking in a generality. And for me, that's where I see that it misses the connection every human being has, that every human being is religion before it's a form. Every human being is the spiritual nature that is the basis of every religion. You are already what you're looking for in the religions. And they all speak to God. They all speak to that energy in some way. And I think the thing for me when I heard the principles in terms of religion was this one factor. I have it. I am it. That isness or whatever that I was taught to look for or that is outside of me is not outside of me. I am a part of it. Now, I'm not God, but I am God. I'm not the spiritual energy, but I am the spiritual energy. It's vast, more vast than me because everybody else is also connected to it. And so when religions speak to love, to finding love and understanding for others and gratefulness and generosity and all, they're speaking from that spiritual energy and it's coming into a form of giving to others or being in a good feeling. And I think what the understanding of the principles has provided for me, again, just to repeat myself, is that it's not outside of you. It's just simply not outside of you. You are that energy. And but so is everyone else. And that's where the sense of community is deep. That's why, I forgot who said, I love just coming here for the feeling. When we started to find this understanding in the San Francisco Bay Area around 1982, when I started to hear about it and meet people that had been taking this into psychology, and we would meet at the University of California Faculty Club, and it was just this beautiful feeling. Beautiful feeling, because the minute you got there, what would happen? People would let all their personal thinking go, and all of a sudden in came this feeling of love and understanding and connection, that feeling of connection that everybody's looking for, and you'd have this wonderful feeling. And early on, what we found was that if you didn't tell people about the principles, that you were creating the feeling through the power you have to think right, people would attribute it to something outside of themselves. So they would say things like, you know, this sounds like the Bible, or this sounds like this other writing, or this sounds like this. And then look there, rather than look within. So it helps people when you tell them about the principles and what they are a part of, because you can go and enjoy the Bible. You can go and enjoy religious books. You can go and enjoy the Michael Neal's book, you see. But you don't get trapped into needing to look there to get what you're looking for. You already have it. That's just something that kind of you're looking at to get more of the feeling that you already have.
You know, every time I get I get another level. Like I fall down a flight of stairs in my mind. You know, I find another level of depth of understanding. I go back and reread some of my favorite religious books from different religions, and I spend a lot of time going, oh. For me, it's even within the religious expression, there's levels of consciousness. And so at one level of consciousness, I'll read it, and it will sound very restrictive and not very nice at all. And then I'll go back and read it from a different level of consciousness, and all I'll feel is the love and the awesomeness and the metaphor. You know, I for me.
And the thing is, the writing hasn't changed.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. The writing hasn't changed. Your level of understanding change, so it looks.
Yeah.
You can see the depth that's in the writing.
I mean, you know, I come back to this one because it so struck me. The Ten Commandments, right? Not the movie. No, that was kind of cool, but you can read them as, you know, the things to do if you don't want to get smote. I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm using my conjugating my smiting correctly to smite. I smite. He smites. We smite. They smote. I don't know. But you can read it as the form that behavior takes when spirit is present, or when you are present to God or spirit. When I have God in my heart, I will put no other God's forms before. When I have God in my heart, I will not kill. I have God in my heart, I will not covet my neighbor's wife. I will not commit adultery. I will not bear false witness. Like, it's an expression. Now, I'm not saying that's right. I'm not saying, I'm claiming mm-hmm. no knowledge of intent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that my experience is, and I've gone to the books of 5, 6, 7 major religions, is when I come back to them with fresh eyes, there is so much spirit in them. And that didn't seem to be there when I came to them as a child.
The feeling of this, I just want to give, you know, we're speaking at a depth, and I can feel that it's with people. I just wanted to share with you the feeling of this. Another cute story, but when Sydney Banks would give seminars on the weekends, or weekend seminar, or 3 or 4 day seminar, he didn't want people to be there for a full day, because he knew that you just wanted to go out and have fun and enjoy your life. That was the whole point of this, is really to go have fun and enjoy what you were put here to do. So we were at this one seminar in Long Beach, and he talked, and I just had a great feeling about me. And he said, take the afternoon off. And both my wife and I were in this feeling, and the feeling is nothing. There wasn't anything. It was just complete giddiness and being an idiot and laughing for no reason. Like, there wasn't really much thought. For sure, there wasn't any thought about our relationship whatsoever. There was just this wonderful, wonderful feeling. And that's kind of the feeling of this. You know, it has no form. But it is a feeling of happiness and well-being. What words we could put on that? Love. It is that feeling. Carefree. Joy. And so we're walking. And there's a craft fair, wine and craft fair, in the city of Long Beach. And I like that caramel corn, or what is that corn that they...
Kettle corn.
And so my wife says, let's get some kettle corn. So she's standing way up on the street, and I go get it. And I said, I'm feeling so good. I said, give me the extra large, you know, or the large. I just felt so good. I wanted all of that, you know. And they give me a bag that's as tall as me. And I turn to my wife, and she sees it, and then we're laughing. We've just fallen on the floor. And that's the feeling of it. That's the feeling of it. It's just, that's when you know you're there. But when you're there, you don't really think about you being there. You're just enjoying being touching the spiritual lesson. When you touch the spiritual essence, you have a feeling of happiness and well-being. Your thinking gets better, and knowledge occurs. Wisdom that Michael's pointing to comes to you. Knowledge you have already at birth comes to you. So we go through the day, and I'm still on this eating thing. I don't know what it is with these good feelings and eating for me. So we didn't get through that kettle corn, but we're driving along, and I see it's just kind of this market thing. They're called 7-Elevens, but they have all these kind of I guess you call it junk food. So I go in, I got potato chips, soda, you know, all this stuff in a plastic bag. that you can see what the stuff is. So we're walking back to the hotel, and coming by are this couple that I coached, and they're health freak nuts. And I got this bag of junk food. No, I tried to hide it. I did. I tried to hide it. I said, oh, man, they can't see me like this, you know. They think too highly of me. So we're standing up, and I got the bag like this, you know, and they're talking. And I'm thinking, when the hell are they going to leave, you know? I can't. Am I holding, you know? So they finally leave, and my wife turns to me, did you know that the bag was peeking out the whole time? So, you see, I'm just sharing this with you because that kind of is the sense of this. That's the feeling of this, you see. You're not really thinking about it. You're just in it. It's like a nothingness. There isn't really a form really about it. And it's still, until you start thinking about what you're in, then it starts to have a form. Oh, man, look at this great feeling I'm in. But once, when you touch that, automatically you get that feeling of contentment you're looking for. That's probably what it was, pure contentment. That's what we were in, because in contentment, you don't need anything more except kettle corn or something, but you don't need anything more. You just enjoy that. And it wakes up knowledge. You just see things with a deeper understanding. That's why it's tough to say how do you get there, or you know, what's it like? How can you find more of it? Because that feeling you don't create either. You know, like Mark Howard didn't create that feeling. It was something that somehow I touched. It came to me. It came to me. And, you know, the best we could say about it probably is that all my thinking settled down. Somehow all of my life, my thinking about life left. And then it came. That's probably a way to explain it. But I don't really know that happened, because when this happened, when you get an insight, when you get the feeling of contentment or well-being, it's just there. You just all of a sudden are in this level of consciousness. And it isn't like you could think your way there. You can't think your way there. I used to leave a seminar of Sydney Banks at the UC Berkeley Faculty Club. And I'd be in the feeling of love. And I'd say to myself, I got it now. I've got love. I got what I'm looking for. Nothing's going to take this away from me. I finally got it. So in San Francisco, I mean, in Berkeley, you have to cross a bridge to get to my home in San Francisco. So I'm driving. I'm in the feeling of love. I got it now. It'll never leave. Somebody cuts in front of me, and all of a sudden, what the hell? You know, so that's the thing about this, is that it comes to you. And then, as Michael was saying earlier, then you get another thought. And then you get another thought. But it's not you. It's not anything that you can think your way to or hold on to. But you're looking for that feeling. You're looking for that feeling. People call it contentment or happiness, well-being, peace of mind. You're looking for that. You're keeping an eye to that. You were going to ask a question?
The feeling comes when it comes and can also go when it goes. And you said Mark Howard has nothing to do with it. Now, and this may be off the deep end a little bit, but is there a Mark Howard? Like, is there even a personality or not so
much?
Oh,
man. That's beautiful. Well, there is no personality. There is no personality. A personality is an accumulation of your thoughts about yourself. That's all a personality is. So I act like Mark Howard because I have had a long years of ideas about who I am, you know, that kind of keep me as Mark Howard, you know, to some extent. But there really isn't a personality, because the minute you rise a level of consciousness, you're a different person. You're different. You see life differently, just like Michael's saying. So you don't have to worry about this. People used to say to me, they would always be freaked out coming into my addiction program because they'd say, I have an addictive personality. I said, you don't have an addictive personality. You have addictive thoughts. Let's transcend those, and you're going to be a whole different person. You every level you go, you're a different person. So you don't have you have nothing. There's nothing except your thinking about yourself that makes you you. And that's so valuable, because we keep, you know, we've been talking about, you keep kind of waking up. Thankfully, you know, you want to have thought that reminds you who you are, right? You know, so you can wake up and say, oh yeah, you know, I got this life and so forth. That's very helpful. But you don't want to see that you're wedded to the rest of your life, a personality. Because this is what the principles have shared with us. You can transcend whatever you're thinking now. See, when I started at Kaiser, I didn't know the principles. And I told you I was kind of an angry man. I don't mean like, again, fighting man, but I would be right. And I would argue. And I told you, in staff meetings, I would debate everybody. You know? And then I heard what I shared with you about I make up my emotions. I heard that, and I started to listen to Sydney Banks and gain more understanding of the principles. And I was a different person. I was a different person. I just saw that being right was nonsense. It didn't mean anything. It was just an idea I had, and that I need. And then what actually came for me was to be more of an understanding man, a man who could understand other people's states of mind, a man that could understand that my colleagues were just trying to do their best to help people, and you just want to support them. So out of this one way of being came a whole new way of being. Now, I didn't know I was so different, but I was. And 6 months later, this is just to tell you about personality. 6 months later, one of my colleagues came up and said, Mark, you are a different person, and you haven't gone back. And what are you learning? So you do not have a personality. You just think you do. See, you just think you have to keep operating the way you're operating. And so you do. But there are worlds at which you could live a different way. But you're always going to love and understanding. See, your next level will always be closer to love and understanding. It won't be toward meanness, or, you know, it wouldn't be in that direction. Now, is there a Mark Howard? I don't think so. Truly, if we're looking at the spiritual energy, all I am is thought creating a moment and a moment. And that's what it is. You know, there's, like Michael said, there's no self to improve. Now, I don't really, I know this to some extent, okay? Enough to just share this with you. And yet, here I am. You know, here I am. So, but what you want to take from this is that you're not wedded to a personality. That's the hope. That is the hope of these principles. If you're a worrier, if you're depressed, If you're frightened of life, if you're whatever numbers of diagnoses are in the new DSM, if you're any of those, which they hardly miss anybody nowadays. I mean, you look at that book. Skipping along the streets is a DSM category. But you're not that. And that's the hope. The hope is you can have an insight into the nature of the principles and you'll be a different person.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay.
Is this on? Yes, yeah. Okay. It does make sense, but yet I've worked in big companies where it's all about personality tests.
Oh,
how
yeah.
can we fit together, work together better? It's all about yearly evaluations. You got to be this way, and you got to. And if you don't make that yearly evaluation, if you're not the 70%, then you're not doing a good job and don't get promoted. Then it's almost like taking a leap of faith and seeing, I'm just going to be who I am. And I don't know what's going to happen with my job and then with the money and with my life. How do you do that? How do you say, I won't conform? You know, but what about all this life then? How do I live? How would I have the means to live if I don't conform?
Do you know, every person I have spoken with in the principles community who's made that leap of faith, it never felt like a leap of faith to any of us. I've never heard anyone describe it that way. You know, Sandy Crott, one of my early mentors, she packed up, moved across country, left behind a practice. You know, wow, that's brave. No, it's like, why would I, from her point of view, it's like, how could I possibly keep doing that and not go do this? George Pransky, you know, his story of, you know, six-figure, very successful practice back in the 70s, trashed it, moved, living on a tenth of the money in a little room over a pizza place or something like that. And it's like, I might have just made that up from some romantic comedy. And his story sounded a little bit right. Like too. But anyways, the basic bit of the story is true, right? Just totally, everyone said he was really brave. He was like, no, like I can't imagine doing anything else. Right, 10 days before going on a book tour to promote a book about the opposite of this, right, saw this, totally turned my back on the field that had made me well-known and successful. Oh, how brave. Never once felt brave because I just couldn't unsee what I'd seen. So as long as it feels like a leap of faith, I wouldn't even think about leaping. Right, because it's still an idea. And at the level of an idea, we have lots of ideas, and they come and they go. As you stay in this conversation, and this is true for anyone, you will at certain points see things at a new level. And it will be so apparent what to do that you probably won't even perceive it as a decision. And it will be your reaction to things that no longer fit for you won't be, oh God, can I really leave it behind? It will be, why would I do that? That's my experience of this. It's not empowerment. It's not about being brave and even though there's a cliff, I'm going to jump off it. It's like, there's no cliff. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to, I get other people see a cliff there, but I don't, it's not there. It's not part of my reality by the time I do the thing that other people think looks brave. That's a different game. You know, bravery. You know, that's cool. Like I it's fun, but it's not what we're talking about. Does that make sense?
It does, but I guess it takes time.
Well, you know, then, I just wanted to share in terms of my lasting in an organization. That what we're speaking to is an understanding in you. You get a level of understanding in you where you see people are just operating at the level of their thinking. So they do merit evaluations and all of that. It's a game. But the way you look at that, the way, and I'll just speak for myself, when I had the understanding I had, the way I and continue to have about the principles, the way I looked at it was, I didn't look at it the same way I did when I didn't have the understanding. When I looked at it the way I when I didn't have the understanding, it looked like offensive to me. This is just me. It looked offensive to me. It looked like, oh, how could they do this? And when I had that understanding, I just saw, you know, people are just operating according to the way they're thinking. And then I could have understanding for my director. I could have understanding for the way they were running the organization. It was a level of understanding, so I could live in there. And I could be, you know, so that's what I chose to do, was to just be in that organization. But it wasn't like like Michael saying, a bravery decision. It was a level of understanding change. I was living in a whole different reality of understanding the levels of consciousness of the people around me. And so I could relate to them in a whole different way. Rather than be bothered by the ways they were trying to evaluate me, I could try to let them know I wanted to support them. Things like this started to occur to me about how to talk to this organization and the people who were directing my department and so forth in a way that made a connection rather than a disconnection. But the piece of it, I think you're pointing to it as well, is that it's a level of understanding change.
Well,
you see something and you can't do the other thing.
Yeah, the fact that there's a dissonance is just like, well, if I'm working in an organization where French is the language, speaking French isn't a betrayal of what I've seen. It's just kind of an obvious move if I want to stay in the organization and get along. It's not, I haven't sold out by learning French. It's just, well, of course I'm going to speak French because that's what they're speaking.
Yeah.
It's not, it doesn't take anything from me to do it. I'm not, oh, I mean, we all know the real language is English, but okay. Pardonnez-moi, monsieur? right? There's nothing behind it.
Yeah.
It's just that's the language they speak.
Yeah.
So if they speak personality assessment, well, I can learn to speak personality assessment enough to get by. It doesn't cost me anything. And that's the thing. It's not really about me at that point. It's just once you're in form, different forms have different rules. You can play by them or not, but there's nothing more to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think... So there's a couple of things here. Oh, this is cool. I love this. So there's a couple of things. I would not, with what I saw when I came back after that first meeting with Sydney Banks, that first seminar, I would never do a personality test again. So that may have been, I don't know, what do you call it? The last straw, I don't know. That may have been a deciding factor. I could not deliver, I would never do it. Let other people, fine, if that's how you're thinking, but I would never do it. It isn't what I saw anymore. But what I'm talking about at the level of understanding was it dawned on me as I had a level of understanding on my job that the way I was creating insecurity in my boss. That I was acting in a way that she thought I wasn't going to have my team follow her support. That's what I saw. I didn't know this beforehand. But with that, that's the understanding I'm talking about. Now, once I saw that, then I went to her and corrected it. I took responsibility and said, oh, man, I gotta not do that because I see what's happening. See, so that's what I mean by the understanding. When you rise a level of understanding, you see that you could take care of things in an organization, at least take care of your part. So, man, it opened my eyes to, you always think it's your director that's causing you to have a tough day. And I started to realize it was the way I was responding to my director that was getting her into a state of mind, you know. And so I went and I corrected it with her. And then she too said, what are you learning, you know. And then she came in and started to learn the principles. It changed her whole psychiatry practice. But I think if they would have told me I had to do personality tests, it wouldn't have happened.
Right. Well, then that's the thing. Is, you might have just chosen to leave, but it wouldn't have been a big deal. It would be like, you know what? That's not really what I'm into. I'm going to be, you know, that's the thing, is it's so matter of fact, right? You know, decision making is one of those things that I spent a long time studying only to find that the way it looks to me now is if it looks like there's a decision to make, it's because I'm caught up in my thinking. Like, that's actually just a feedback mechanism. Because I'm making decisions without any personal thought all day long. And then every now and again, there's one, it's like the flow of constant decision making behind everything I do gets interrupted. And it looks like there is a decision that I have to make. Now, I've gone from this flow through that's always happening, and thousands of little decisions and choices are being made all the time, and suddenly I've got a decision to make. I've got a decision to make. Now I've cut off from that flow. I've cut off from that. And that's what that lets me know. It looks like this is separate to the flow. It looks like suddenly I'm separate and this one thing is separate. And so for me now, that no longer looks like, given that there's a decision to make, I need strategies for making better decisions. It's just, I must be caught up. Mm. Well, you know, I know about being caught up. It passes. You know, and it usually passes by not doing anything about it. Like, it usually passes by getting on with something else. And then, lo and behold, I'm doing stuff, and apparently the decision was made. Now, that's not to say there aren't times where I will go, okay, we're doing that. But usually, that's fucked. Like, usually what comes from that place is awful. Because it isn't, I've cut off. So it's almost like I'm trying to make, the fact that it looks like an important decision is what lets me know I've lost my bearings. It's not a sign that I need more resource. It's a sign that I've just gotten a little confused. I've gotten a little lost. And that's okay. I get lost all the time, but I get found again. You know, I find myself. I come back to myself. I come back home. And that's really such an ordinary thing. Right? We all do that. The principles are always unfolding like that. It's just that if we don't understand that they're a constant, that there is a constant behind that unfolding, we start treating it on a case-by-case basis. Well, yeah, but what about when this happens? Well, yeah, but what about when this happens? Well, yeah, but what about when this happens? There's nothing different about each one. You're in the flow of this creative force, or you're caught up and cut off to a greater or lesser extent. Right? That's why in the book I use the analogy of online and offline, because it's sort of like I always see on the, you know, the signal strength. It's like the signal's constant, but the amount of interference varies. The signal is constant, right? The infinite intelligence is always there, but how much noise there is in my system affects the signal strength at any given moment. And I can function with low signal strength. I can even function offline, but it's so qualitatively different to how I function when I'm online, when I have more bars, right? And you know, that except for the fact that it would be totally misinterpreted, that should be the new slogan, you know, learn the principles, more bars in more places, right? You know, it's because that's what you start to find. It's not situation dependent.
Yeah.
It's not, I can only do this in a mellow environment. I can only do this when other people agree with me. I can only do this when I've slept enough. I can only do this, on a
on a Thursday, whatever it is, it can't be that, because that's not how the system works.
It makes sense, and I think that's one of the reasons why I'm here. Because for the most part of my life, I always thought, I just don't fit in. There is something not going right. Like going from job to job and not even in the same industry. We're in different industries. There must be something because this isn't working. The outside impulses are so different and I can't conform to them. Yeah. I don't fit in. And I think that kind of leads to negativity, depression, whatever, because I like look around me and I just don't, why? What is it? Like there must be something else that goes on. And then hence I'm here.
See, and there's a wisdom behind that. So what I just heard you describing was, well, and this, and this, and this, and this, and this. And yet even while all that's going on, something's coming through that says, hey, listen to this. Hey, come along to this. Right? Now that's coming through at any level. That's coming through, and I've heard you talk about this. That's coming through when somebody drinks. They're at what at the level that they're at, they can see something's letting them know, hey, you got to get out of this. And so they do what they know to do to get out of it. And as they go up in levels of consciousness, just better stuff comes through. And that's the thing. We are never abandoned by mind. You know, we're never left to our own devices. We can lose our bearings and think we are, and then we'll have that experience. You know, I sometimes liken it to the difference between trying to get better at navigating blindfolded and learning the difference between when you're blindfolded and when you're not. You know, that's why there's nothing to do. Because when you're not blindfolded, it's easy to get around. When you're blindfolded, yeah, there's a hell of a lot to learn. But why would you go around blindfolded if you don't have to? And that's the thing. Once you start to see the potential of living in harmony with this creative force, of allowing this through more and more, of going to here, instead of here, when you don't know what to do. It just doesn't make sense anymore. Doesn't mean you don't lose your way and sometimes do it, but you don't do it on purpose, right? I used to do it on purpose. That was the thing for me, is, you know, I thought I was supposed to be able to figure it out. That was why I was so good at things, because I was smart and I was intelligent and I was well-educated and I could do it. Right? Yeah. You too? Yeah. Right? And it was fucking exhausting.
Yes.
Yes. Right? And it was a shock, and it's a shock that keeps coming back at different levels. That even back in 1990 when I started teaching, people who knew me back then say, well, yeah, you were clever and all that. But we came for the feeling. We put up with that, but we came for the feeling. I didn't know that. You know, I thought it was my tap dancing, right? You know? Right? And it was, and then, you know...
It was for the feeling.
It was the feeling.
Believe me.
Yeah. Well, you know,
after that performance.
No, fair enough. You know, but I mean, I remember I would bounce around the stage, and I would do all this, and, you know, when I did the big NLP seminars, 500-600 people, and, you know, and they were like, well, yeah, you were bouncy, but that's not why we liked your bits. Now, I didn't know that. But once I started to see it, and that had it always been that way, people will put up with a lot. You know, generally speaking, they don't love you because they love you in spite of.
Yeah.
And that's my experience. It's like, yeah. No, love loves love. And will put up with a hell of a lot along the way. And yet we, not knowing that in our innocence, cultivate what's in the way, because we think that's what we're being loved for.
And it's just a misunderstanding. It's all it is, and it's an innocent misunderstanding. And from within that misunderstanding, all that behavior makes total sense. It's not weird at all what people do. It's only weird once you see, oh, that's not how it works. You know, it's only weird to kind of try and plan everything out and work out the entire script. My first talk in 1990 had a map. Davey was there, right? And it was, okay, we're going to do that, and then we're going to do this, and this is going to take 90 seconds. And then we're going to do that, and that's going to take 2 minutes. And as it went through, and it went up, and it went down, and as that chart went through, it was like, okay, it should be 6:42 a.m. when we hit that point in the talk. And it was planned out like that, because it looked to me like I had to be in charge in order for anything good to happen. You know, people ask me, did I have notes for the TED Talk? No. I did have slides, so I knew there were slalom poles I was going to have to ski through. But if I did that talk 5 times, it would have been 5 different talks that all went through the same slides. Now, that's because I know about this. And because I know about this, I've been willing to play in this. And because I played in it for a while, it just doesn't make sense. I know the difference now. And once you get a feel for the difference, there's no going back. I mean, you know, when I get really insecure, I might try to plan. But really what that's letting me know is I'm really insecure. It's not like I would then try to follow the plan.
Wow, that's some good stuff. Feels good. You know, I just one other point I wanted to share with you. Maybe you should get the lunch break. One other thing about, I do something around trying to find my guidance. And what I do is I try to go back to the principles. I try to quiet down and go back to the principles when I see it, when I'm in a feeling of dilemma. And I do that all the time with my work. And it got to a point, Kathy Casey jokes about this, but I brought the principals into Santa Clara County in California. We had a small group of 12 that we would meet twice a month and talk about how to apply the principles. And Kathy Casey was part of that. This is back in 1994. And so whenever I did, I felt like I was going outside into my own personal thinking and kind of getting lost, I would come back. I would get quiet. This is what I would do, get quiet and come in until I felt some guidance. Well, the jokes started to come about that, me doing that, in the sense that they would be saying, we could go get lunch during that time that Mark's getting quiet. And by the time he's got something more to say, you know. But that's what I do. You know, like when you have these kinds of life dilemmas, if you know that you are the wisdom, the intelligence of the universe, at least that's how I look at it, you know, I go back in. I try to get quiet and go look and wait to hear something. And again, it's assisting you. So it will show up. And even like our event together, I've been thinking about it since we started to write some things about what points we want to make. But I was telling my wife as I left, I don't know where I'm going to go. I don't know where I'm going to go on Friday night, you know, and this was 2 days before. But you get into that feeling and it assists you. Like Michael is saying, you know, each time he would go to make the same points on a different day, it would be worded differently. But it's coming from the same source. And you trust that you can go quiet about you and listen beyond who you are. And you'll hear something. That's what I do. And, you know, that's been helpful to me. In fact, I did a breakout session last year called Listening Beyond Yourself for practitioners. And this is kind of like what I'm talking about. It's like when you're with a human being, you want to listen beyond who you are. You don't want your assumptions, beliefs, and so forth to be how you understand the person. Yeah. Well, I thought that was a good morning. Thank you so much. It's been so great to be with you.